SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 10 minutes into hour two on this weekend preview at the races, coming to you live from Tampa Bay and across, not across the state, but about midway in the state and up a little north, horse country, Ocala, and Hammer on hand. And with Jimmy Ventura, they're touring around as the two-year-old in training sale. The Breed Show continues at OBS. We'll be at OBS Monday and Tuesday to broadcast. And the sale, of course, starts Tuesday. It's a two-day sale, Tuesday, Wednesday. And should be fun. And first-time experience on that front for me. Hammer, what do you think of Ocala?
Good morning. Well, this is my second time here. I was here.
Nice.
I was here in November when they had, or was it, yeah, October? Yeah, November, when they had their one day of racing. And believe it or not, that was the last time that I've seen a live horse race was in Ocala. Not many people can say that. And so I hadn't been here, so now all of a sudden I'm here two times in 3 or 4 months. But basically, all I'm trying to do is be Steve Bick and travel around the country and, you know, kind of live the good life. So, but we're here with Jimmy, and I tell you, today has been unbelievable. We went out. Jimmy has a filly out at Bridlewood Farm, of which I have obviously never been to. And you talk about a slice of heaven out there early in the morning with the, you know, it's still a little dew on the grass, and to drive into that place, it was like it was magical. I mean, just the barns there, and they have a 7/8 mile track and a turf track, and the horses, the 2-year-olds, were just getting ready for their morning exercise, coming out two at a time. And I think they have the only hill in Florida, and so it was actually, you know, I have trouble with direction here without a hill, but seriously, Jonathan Thomas was there, directing,
George
was there and just directing, you know, things. And I mean, that was one of the most beautiful farms they've ever seen. So, I thank the Jimmy, goes, we're getting up early. We're going to Bridlewood. I said, I'm in.
Nice.
So, we did that. Now we're out here at, in the middle of the breeze. And of course it's very serious business. So we had to come downstairs into the gambling hall here to talk to you. But yeah, so they got 577 horses cataloged to sell next week. This is the second day of the Breeze Show. Tomorrow is the last day to finish that up, take a couple days off, and then the sale starts on the 12th and the 13th. So a lot of fast horses. Watched the tape last night of yesterday's Breeze Show at Tom's house, Tom Ventura, Jimmy's brother. And being away from, you know, the inside of an office is, you know, giving me a chance to get out and see a different part of the game, which I don't get to see that often. And you know, it's stuff that fans should take a look at, too. Think about that, you know, when you're running around, you know, set up a farm tour, set up, you know, go to something like this and just sit back and watch, because this is where it all begins. You know, the breeding of it, and then obviously the, you know, putting them on display and trying to sell them and see how they move along. But you know, always fun to be here with Jimmy and Tommy, and it's great. And you'll be up here in a couple of days yourself.
Absolutely, and looking forward to it. I've only been a couple of times, really maybe three times through there, and I'm anxious to see the newly remodeled. Is all the remodeling done at OBS?
I think that there's still like just some finishing touches that need to be done, I think, to the administrative portion. To be honest, I haven't even looked at it yet. I went right to my brother's house last night, and we went to Bridlewood this morning, as Hammer said. So I haven't checked that out, but from what I've been told, everything but some of the admin's been done, and I've heard a lot of good things about it. So after the Breeze show, we'll kind of check it out.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to doing this. It should be fun, and there should be no end of, particularly on Tuesday. We'll have to do a little, more than a little, recapping on Monday, but there'll be an unlimited supply of prominent horsemen and prospective buyers and consigners and more. So it should be a lot of fun. Meanwhile, Rick, let me let's before we talk about any of the racing action, you know, I know you've been in contact with countless participants on the training and owning side, and also co-workers from Santa Anita. Some thoughts about where things stand.
Well, I think that they're doing kind of the right thing at this point. I to paraphrase Jack Reacher, one of the characters in Lee Child's novels, of which there's about 20 of them I've read, and he's a very anybody that doesn't know the character, he's an analyst and he figures things out. And to paraphrase one of his thoughts is basically when a crisis comes at you unexpectedly, don't waste time looking back and pointing fingers. How did it happen? Do it happen? Just gather yourself together, figure out how you're going to get through it, and you know you have plenty of time for going back later. And I think they've finally got that under. They got Dennis Moore there. Dennis Moore obviously was, or not obviously, but for those that don't know, was the track man there the previous 5-6 years, and left at the end of the year. And his assistant Andy took over, who does a fine job, but getting Dennis back on the scene, which they did a few days ago, restores a lot of confidence, which is maybe been lacking out there for the situation. He's had now a couple days, and if anybody knows that racetrack from top to bottom, it's him. And if you know, there's been rumors that they're going to be closed for, you know, a week or two or three, and just knowing Dennis and his situation, I think the track will be in ready to go sooner than it might happen rather than later. That's just my thoughts on the scene. Having him there and, you know, making a few tweaks here and there, he's going to get a break here with the weather. It did rain Wednesday, but he had a full day yesterday, and I think the last look at the weather report was going to be kind, where he's going to be able to go out there and do what he needs to do. So, you know, that's part of the thing. You need people to have confidence in what's being done is the right thing. And I think they got to that point now. And hey, you know what? This is horse racing. We deal with stuff every day as far as obstacles, things not going right. Maybe on a little bit of a smaller scale, but it's not like we're not used to changing directions, and I think the racing community in California will be able to rally and do whatever it takes to, you know, make things right and get the program back on track.
Excellent. Well, just at this point, there's really only monitoring to do and react to the lead that Dennis and McPeterson provide.
I think what needs to be realized is, you know, this is not a Santa Anita problem. This is gone. Put it this way. I rented my car yesterday in Tampa, and the discussion went a little bit, and he says, do you want to buy the gas? And I said, well, I don't know. He goes, where are you going? I said, Ocala. He goes, oh, there's only one reason to go to Ocala. That's for horses. I said, yeah, that's why I'm going. And then he breaks immediately into, oh boy, is that a shame what happened at that track in California. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my god, there's a guy at a rent-a-car counter in Tampa, and he's on top of it. So you know, this might take some PR work and you know, hiring a PR firm to just kind of, you know, let people know. And I mean, it's funny, Jimmy and I were talking this morning, if they could see where these horses, how they're raised and brought along at a place like Bridlewood, and the care that they're given, you know, just in the first part of their world, and then moving along. I mean, it's something that needs to be conveyed to the general public that, you know, this is, you know, unfortunately, things happen. But, I mean, these horses are cared for like you've never seen. And so that's some of the PR work that needs to be done, like I said, not just locally, just nationally, for people to understand what really goes on. So I'm confident that they'll get it together. And, you know, when the news cycle rolls along, we can kind of do things maybe not necessarily under the telescope or the microscope as it's been the last 3, 4, 5 days.
And from a fan's perspective, I'm sure as soon as, you know, the racetrack gets in order and they do what needs to be done, I'm sure management at Santa Anita will go back to running 17 races a day, 62.5 down the hill, 500 horses to race. So, where it just makes it a little bit more challenging. That was my left-handed comment. But, hopefully things get straightened out there and the racing industry in general keeps moving forward to change, within the perception that's in the currently that's in everyone's face.
Well, I don't want to get overly sidetracked on that part of it, other than to reiterate that to me on the external front, I'm always disappointed that there is not a response team that takes care of that part of explaining what might be transpiring. And I saw some people saying how the industry never learns and never. Well, that's not true from the publicity standpoint or the PR standpoint. I'll accept that. Reactions to incidents and circumstances like this, there has been extensive response. And as I showed the other day with the New York Task Force information and report that was circulated, all kinds of changes were made. So from an internal standpoint, the industry has reacted repeatedly and very successfully. That doesn't prevent a situation like this particular circumstance where you get atmospheric pressure and external pressure that we're not appropriately adjusted to from a standpoint of the track maintenance and then some of the other things that clearly went on. But the external portion, I think the internal is fine. The external, I am surprised that after Eight Bells and after the 2012 and some of the other moments that get people saying, asking the kinds of questions they're asking, I am surprised that we don't have. I brought this up actually at HBPA 3 years ago and wondered, and in fact I was attacked for it, frankly, when I brought it up. But that part of it,
far for the course, Steve.
I don't want to get sidetracked on that. Let's turn our attention to what we're going to see here now. Are you guys coming for the? You're going to come for racing tomorrow or not?
We haven't decided. We haven't decided.
All right.
Probably going to. If we end up watching the Breeze Show here, we're going to stay here.
I got you. All right. Well, some opinions? What did you get a chance on the plane to look at?
Of course. Now we had coming off a good week last week in the Fountain of Youth, so we got to keep the roll going.
That's right. You gave out the Fountain Exacta. Very nicely done.
Yes, and you know what? I actually bet it, and I actually bet it right. One of those rarities where, actually the odds were threw me off. I had initially made a win bet on Bourbon War because he was 10-1 in the program, and then a couple minutes to post, basically those odds flipped. Code of Honor, and I actually took the bet off and bet it on the longer odds of Code of Honor, and so that turned out well. And like I said, when we're doing these races, we're handicapping these races for today only, not what you think might the horse might do, you know, 2 months from now in the Kentucky Derby. So and I think that's what helped there. And I think those two horses, both of them look like they're going to move on. And, you know, the Mod Colt, he probably learned a hell of a lot during that race. I mean, he got some experience doing that. I doubt we'll see that kind of exhibition speed, the challenging race as it was. As you pointed out, someone pointed out, it was like the fifth fastest race out of 500 at that distance at Gulfstream. So I think the horse learned a lot, and if they plan on going on and giving it one more shot, I think the horse will run good. So carry on from that. So you want to start with the Gotham?
Sure.
Or Tampa Bay? Which way you want to go?
You can start in New York, work our way here.
Okay. So the Gotham, interesting. I mean, this is a race I don't keep tabs on, but I think this might be one of the best renditions we've seen in a while, just with you got a couple of grade one winners in there with Nix Go, however you pronounce that horse correctly. He's a grade one winner. Gregory Dean Sacco has a Mind Control in there, a hopeful winner, is a grade one winner. And but the horse I think that's going to at least attract everybody, whether at the windows or just to watch, obviously, is Instagram. And we're talking to actually John Dowd, who's here, who manages the old OXO stable. This move here, you know, you read some early on that this horse is going to run the San Felipe and maybe that, but this was their thought all the time. I mean, think about this horse hasn't run since August, going three quarters, so the one turn mile fits perfectly into a comeback race. And like you said, look, if he runs good here, and they'll move on, and they won't make any decisions until after the race is over. But he is doing good. I mean, of course, threw a pair of tens at you. I mean, and then they put him away. So he'll be the horse to look at. And if you don't like him, I mean, he's going to take a lot of money. The old other Baffert that ended up there, I don't know if he was coming anyway or not. They did a little experimenting on the turf, and he was okay here and there. And he ran decently in the Sham and came back sprinting. It looks like he's going to be one of those sprinters. So this one turn mile hits him in the head. And, you know, he could be all right. But, and then I want to talk about one other horse that might be overlooked again is the Rudy Rod horse, the Not That Brady, who ran second.
Right.
Last time he ran great. And I think with all this other stuff going on the side, this horse might, he went off at 8-1 last time. He might be 8-10 to 12-1 in there. So that might be the price play in there. But, that's a very interesting rendition of it, and we'll see what Jimmy has to say.
I think that Mind Control will be a decent price. Fred can train a horse. I think if it had, you know, a high-profile trainer on it, he'd be the favorite in the race, maybe over Instagram, not sure. I mean, obviously, he's the class of the race. But my choice in there is Mind Control and Not That Brady.
The Brady was so strong, and at the only problem I have is that fact that he just wasn't completely committed to this from word go because of the quarter crack, and that's just going to be a lingering concern. But he was so game. I don't know.
At the price, I think you got to take a look at him.
And I think his numbers on paper are really, really good. Even if it wasn't in the game plan, Steve, he had good two-year-old numbers. He moved forward in the aqueduct race on the thoroughgraph. He ran a 3.25, which should be pretty damn close to getting the job done.
Very good. All right. What else?
So one more thing. I got I don't know where it was, an email or a Twitter or something. I was asked about the weight in these three-year-old prep races, which I never really thought about. And if you notice, like the Gotham, you have a high weight of 123, and then there's a low weight of 118. So you got horses given 5 pounds away. At Tampa Bay, you got a high weight of 123, and then you have the 117. And then you go to Turfway Park, and they're all carrying 123. in the Jim Beam or the Jeff Ruby Stakes. So my comment on that, and it's an interesting question about the 3-year-olds this time of year should in these races, should they be carrying the same? What should they be? And you know, it's one of those things you don't think about too much. And I think, to tell you the truth, I think maybe lazily these races may have been this way for a long time, and then they just, you know, just I did the same thing. Okay, that's the way it's been. You don't think about it. You just keep doing it over and over and over. So when you think about it, my belief is earlier in the year, you know, these horses are just developing, you know, January, February, maybe the horses that are coming off a maiden win or an allowance win and they're facing graded winners in January and February, maybe they should get a few pounds just to get their, you know, if it helps to get their confidence up and do that. But once you start down the trail, which basically we are doing now, we're in the final throes of the run to the Derby. You're playing with the big boys. I'm thinking maybe everyone should be the same. When you get to that level and you're going to run, I'm thinking maybe they should all be the same as they are, obviously, in the Kentucky Derby. But I didn't have a problem with getting a little bit of a break earlier in the year. So everybody does it differently. And of course, like I said, you know, that's the way we are in this game. And you just gave an example there, three different races, three different weights, one equal, one with different allowances. So there's, and like I said, maybe it's just the way that it's been in that race years ago. And when I get back home, actually, I'll do a little research and see maybe 10 years ago if everything was exactly the same. And, you know, maybe there could be some uniformity in the weights, how they're given in these prep races. But I wanted to throw that out there and it's food for thought and maybe get what you think about it.
You know, it always seemed to me to be, you know, a progression. And I do get the people saying, you know, shouldn't this all be level weight shouldn't it all be on the same page? But you know, don't forget that all of these races kind of evolved in the way and under the conditions that they did, and so I think it's kind of natural to have them, you know, go from the teens into the low 20s, and you know, then by the time we hit April and May, and you know, then they're all running at equal weights for the classics. So
I'm not a big weight guy. I'm not a big weight guy to begin with, so when I was, you know, looking at weight, I try to keep them similar, but I, you know, 2-3 pounds here and there, that never was a big deal for me as far as the races. So I just try to keep them kind of close, but I didn't have the big gaps. And sure. Anyway, that's just another topic for discussion, which is great. So I wanted to just talk about that. So let's move on to the, yeah, to the other city by the bay, Tampa. And what a nice card put together there. It's great. I mean, Allison DeLuca, who puts the races together there. I just thought she got the job in Virginia. That's a great choice. And she's solidly moved Tampa up from, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago from just another place to a real alternative to run, especially here in South Florida. You see a lot of guys ship up here to run on the turf, to break their maiden, to run in some of the graded stakes, or even some of the non-graded stakes. So Tampa has really, really stamped itself as a place to go. And when you say you're running a Tampa, it's not like, oh, too bad. No, it's good. And this card is will surely shows that they can sure attract the horsemen from all over the place. But anyway, Tampa Bay down, going in there. This is a good race. This is a good race. I know we got your horse. You've been waiting to run back for a long time. Win in there, and it looks like we were just going over, Jimmy and I, a lot of speed in there. And the first thing you said to me, you can't throw out Well Defined. And I said, really? He said, no. We went through the numbers, and you know, progressing life, and you know, ran a big number on the sheets last time, but obviously likes the track, so you can't throw him out. My initial reaction to this whole thing is I think there's going to be a lot of speed. I could see the race falling apart about the eighth fall. I'm looking at a horse like Dreammaker, which really resembles Mark Henning's horse that ran in the Fountain of Youth, Bourbon War. Just kind of has a carbon copy of him. Looks like he's coming up to this race real good. I don't care what he can do next week or tomorrow, whatever. This race looks like, for Mark, there's the spot. So I could kind of see him being there, picking up the pieces. And, you know, the horse that intrigued me, we talked about, was this horse on the outside coming out of the swale, Zenden. He's another one. He's going first time long. You know, there's a couple of things not to like, but he just has the look to me like he's sitting on a big race. His numbers are steady from his two-year-old year through this. I think he's going to be a real, real decent price. And, you know, along with your horse, win in there, I see those three definitely. So Jimmy has a different opinion, but that's what I see.
Well, no, I like basically Dreammaker and Well Defined. I think that Well Defined is going to be challenged on the front end, but I think is a little bit better horse than people are going to give him credit to be, and doesn't necessarily have to be on the front, but that's yet to be seen. So, and again, as Hammer said, Dreammaker should be running down the lane, picking up the pieces. Funny enough, in the last Derby future pool, I said, let me get a bet in before the odds shift, and Las Vegas wasn't taking any more action, I guess because they got beat up so much by Justify. So couldn't even bet the future there. So I made a bet on Mark's other horse, War of Will, in the future. And then when I went back to check the bet 2 days later after the pool closed, I realized I pressed number 23 versus number 22. So I have win in my future bet.
Ooh, all right.
Derby. So I mean, look, the horse is super fast. I mean, how far does he go? The hat trick, Smarty Jones, don't know, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? I heard the horse is training like a monster, and I wouldn't be sad to see that horse win, so I'm going to put that one in my gimmicks as well.
Nice. All right. What else you got? I got to get to Priv.
Yep, I think that's it. You can bring Jay in. You know, we. But no, I think that's all we got here.
I think the Philly race, the Tampa Bay Oaks race, that Concrete Rose, just looks crazy good. I don't know. I haven't seen odds or anything else. I mean, as Hammer might have mentioned last week, the odds of the two of us being it, one being on one coast and then the other on the other coast, both seeing Broadway productions of Hamilton and Cap was kind of rare. But I'm not as well-tuned as I used to be, but Concrete Rose, I think, is the best bet.
I love it. Well, an early season visit before Belmont and before Breeders' Cup from Jimmy Ventura and Hammer. And, guys, we'll see you on Sunday. And no matter what you're doing here the next couple of days, enjoy. And Hammer, you could do some co-hosting Monday and Tuesday.
I'm in. I'm ready. This is a tune-up.
Excellent. Well done.
I'll be ready to put the headphones on with you, Steve. So, yeah,
excellent.
Looking forward to it.
Well,
have a good
appreciate
one,
it. Thanks, guys, and we'll be up
enjoy
in Ocala starting Sunday. There you go. Ventura and Hammerly. Let's take a break. Come right back. Jay Privman standing by, and we'll talk about the George Wolfe Award announcement coming here in the last 90 minutes, and much, much more with Jay. Derby Watch, Fountain of Youth recapping, and his Santa Anita / Rebel thoughts. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So,
after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions 3 straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Porchbills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
What's that?
Yeah.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I want to be high now.
Wait a minute.
Groovy, groovy, jazzy, funky, pounce, bounce, dance as we dip in the melodic sea. Rhythm keeps flowing and trips to MC. Sweet sugar pop, rocks and pop. You don't stop till the sweet beat drops. I show improve as I stick and move. Vivid poems recited on top of the groove. Smooth mind, floating like a butterfly. Notes set afloat, sung like a lullaby. Brace yourself as the beat hits ya. Dip, trip, hit Fantasia.
We're back in Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay Downs. Jay Brittman standing by, and a lot to cover with Jay, and we'll get right to it. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Just enjoying being here at Tampa, having a nice time sharing the experience with Marty McGee, and looking forward to tomorrow. We'll get to the action in a minute, but let's do some breaking news conversation and also some recapping from last week. Put it in your hands.
What are you? I can't figure out. You need to be more specific, Steve. I don't know what you're
Well, the breaking
about.
News, the George Wolfe Award that you mentioned was coming out this morning.
Okay. That covers a lot for somebody who literally just woke up 5 minutes
that
ago.
That a boy.
So, yeah. Sorry, Steve. Couldn't
That's
read
right.
mind that 3,000 miles away. I'll do better next week. Yes, Santa Anita announced earlier this morning that Scott Stevens is the winner of this year's George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award. I think it's a great choice. He has been, I wrote in the story, to me, I think Jay Hubney might have referred to him as this years ago, but I'm going to steal it for today, that he's the Crash Davis of horse racing.
That's great.
I mean, he's ridden for 40 years, a lot of integrity, winner of 4,890 races, including two on Wednesday, and just a terrific person who's mentored a number of riders who've won thousands of races themselves. He was the whole reason that Gary Stevens became a jockey, following his big brother into the sport, and Gary obviously went on to a Hall of Fame career. They become the first brothers to win the Wolfe Award, which is, Gary won it in 1996, and the award's been given out every year since 1950. But, I mean, there's been a lot of bad news, obviously, out of Santa Anita recently, but they nailed this one. Honestly, I can't think of a more appropriate person to win the Wolfe Award than Scott Stevens.
That's great. And he had been a finalist at least a couple of times the last, I don't know, 4 to 5 years. So really nice. And you're right. A winning selection, definitely. Not that any of the finalists wouldn't be appropriate, but it's nice to see him. How old is Scott at this point?
He is 58.
58. How about that?
Still going strong.
Amazing. It's just amazing.
Now. Yeah, and like you said, I mean, he's won. I don't think people realize it. I mean, he's 110 wins away from 5,000. I mean, he's 48-90. I mean, he's had a heck of a career, and he's had some brutal injuries during his career, including one at Canterbury a few years ago. Well, more than a few years now, but still, he almost lost his life. He had to be helicoptered out of there.
Wow.
And he still loves it. He wants to be out there, and he's. Like I said, he's been a mentor to races to race riders, and what this award represents, which is contributions and integrity to the sport on and off the racetrack. To me, he's the right choice. The other four finalists are all great. I mean, they had a great ballot this year. The other four finalists were Joe Bravo, Kerwin Clark, John Davila Jr., and Julian Leperu. All terrific people, but. You know, it was Scott Stevens' time, and I really think they nailed it this year.
And you mentioned the 110 wins away, and last year he won 124 races. He's already won 39 this year, with the year not even a quarter over. So he could. He's on a pace to maybe hit 5,000 this year, but certainly by early next year. And he'd become, I believe, I want to say 30th to 33rd or in that range to win 5,000. It's an elite status win mark, undoubtedly, in the industry.
Mm-hmm. No, really absolutely. Nice. And actually, that stat is easily looked up on Equibase.com. So I'll look it
there
up
you
for
go.
You while you're formulating a specific question for me next.
Well, let's stay with the news side of things before we recap the fountain. And Jay, you've been on the stomp there, the LA Daily News and Racing Times and the Forum and this situation at Santa Anita. Your thoughts on where we are?
Well, I mean, as I said last week, and I'll still maintain this. I think there are many factors involved in this, and I think the simplistic notion that it's strictly the racetrack surface only is naive. There have been other factors, I believe, that have come into play, specifically this season at Santa Anita, regarding frequency of races and pressure put on horsemen to run more. And I think all parties going forward need to be a little more mindful of, you know, the core reason that we're all at the racetrack, which is the animal. Mick Peterson did diagnostics last week. He didn't find anything wrong with the track. And then, as you know, racing and training resumed, and there were two more fatalities. And look, there's going to be, unfortunately, that's an aspect of the sport. You can mitigate as much as you want and have perfect conditions, and still, something can go wrong. It could happen to any sport horse who goes over around a show jumping ring, or is out in a field. I mean, they're kind of on self-destruct a lot of times, and things can happen. But you have to utilize best practices always. And I'm not sure Santa Anita did that this year, to be perfectly honest. And I'm hoping that saner. Minds can be utilized going forward instead of bullying tactics.
Well put. In terms of fallout, Jay, we'll stay on the Derby watch front. And
I mean, one thing, Steve. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
One thing I want to circle back on was when I was on with you last week, we talked about the surface, and I said, look, I don't to think that it's only the surface. To me, one of the pieces of evidence I would have on that was what happened, a week and a half ago Monday when they were going to close the track for training, and it was like the All-Star game out there that morning in terms of, all the best horses on the circuit had workouts from Hall of Fame trainers, and those guys are not going to risk horses of that quality if they all believe that the surface is messed up. It just doesn't stand to reason. So that's why, for a lot of people to believe that the only thing going on here is the surface is naivete. I'm glad that egos stood down finally, and that Dennis Moore is back looking at the surface. He oversaw the surface for a number of recent years and left of his own volition last year, still worked at Los Alamitos and Del Mar, so do the math there. And after the rash of injuries that had happened earlier, it took until, Racing Form reached out to Moore last week and asked, has Santa Anita contacted you yet? And they said no. And it wasn't until the most recent things that they finally reached out and said, maybe we ought to have him come in too and take a look at things here. So there's a lot of things here where people have been late to the party in terms of addressing things, and, hopefully now things can be properly addressed and on a lot of levels at that racetrack, and smarter things can happen going forward.
Very good. I agree on all fronts. Now, Jay, before we talk Fountain of Youth recap and the three-year-old events that are tomorrow, let me give you the chance to bring everybody up to speed on the Rebel circumstance, the opportunity to split the race and everything, and how that came about with the Sella family in typical fashion being very gracious about the way things were unfolding.
Right. So the Rebel is a week from tomorrow. It's a million-dollar grade two race with 85 points overall and 50 to the winner. And in light of what's been going on at Santa Anita, Oakland has stepped up and said that if they get 20 or more entries for the race, they would split it into two divisions that would have at least 10 horses each. And from everything I can tell, that's going to happen. There's plenty of interest in the race. You've got three horses that Baffert could send down there, two that Hollendorfer could send down there, and two that Mandela could send down there for starters from California. And I'm sure with the race being split, you'd get a lot more interest from other locales, and even maybe a horseman at Oakland that see an opportunity. And what Oakland's going to do, if that does happen, they would split the race into two divisions of $750,000 each. So the total prize money would be $1.5 million. But it would be split, right? So they're putting up an extra $500,000, basically, if this comes to pass. And if they have the two divisions of $750,000 each, by rule of what Churchill Downs had done with the Derby point system, if a race gets split, the points value percentage is reflective of what the purse percentage would be. So in this case, each division would be 75% of the original prize money, right? $750,000
right.
Each, as opposed to $1 million race. And so both divisions would be worth 75% of 85 points overall and 75% of 50 points to the winner. Long story short, the winner of each division, if it's run in two divisions, would get 37.5 points.
Yeah, and 15 for the runner-up, etc. So this is certainly a helpful opportunity. I read down the 18 or so names that are already seemingly pointed for this, and ideally, as you suggest, this provides some relief, albeit inconvenience, for the connections of the horses that had been San Felipe intended, and it might open the door for, obviously, as you say, for others. So we'll table that for next week. Jay, let's now come back. And
and by the way, Steve, the answer to the question that you posited earlier is 34.
Yes.
There are 34 jockeys with 5,000 or more wins in North America. Scott Stevens currently ranks 37th on the all-time list.
Excellent. And all right. Any other actives in between him and I know, didn't Ramon fall just short of?
He did.
Right?
I mean, 15 in North, 49.85 wins in North America for Ramon. Javier Castellanos got 50-58. I mean, he's still active.
Wow.
There's a number of jockeys. Mike Smith, 55-13. John Velasquez, 6,035. Edgar Prado, 7,020. He has the most of still active riders. Perry Waynutz, 70-19. So there you go.
Incredible. Incredible.
Google is your friend.
Absolutely. Jay, I appreciate it. Let's come back to last week and the Fountain of Youth. And I reminded everybody early this morning to make sure they go to the Derby Watch Central and take the opportunity to read through your expanded race notes. From a personal standpoint, the way things unfolded in front of you last week.
Yeah, I think it was, as I wrote in the recap, it was a pace makes the race clinic. I thought the first couple horses benefited by the way the race unfolded, but it was nice to see Code of Honor bounce back with a good effort. Shug McGahee had said that he trained him harder into the race, and he was hoping that that might result in a better performance, and it did. So it was good to see him return to the promise that it looked like he had way back when he was a terrific second in the Champagne last fall. And I thought Bourbon War just continued to make steady progress. He ran on well for second. He's had a very good winter there with an allowance win coming into the Fountain of Youth and then another step forward. So I think you'd see him in the Florida Derby. Code of Honor could come back in the Florida Derby, but McGahee left open the possibility of waiting one more week if he needed more time. But so we'll see how that unfolds. It's still less than a week since the race was run. Until horses go back and train, it's hard for a trainer who's weighing a couple options to you don't need to commit yet anyway.
Right.
The race is still 3 to 4 weeks away. I thought Vekoma ran a solid race off the layoff, his first start in 4 months and first start around two turns. He was a solid third. He's got that goofy action. He really paddles pretty badly with his left front, but he's a hard trier. And seeing him in person, he reminded me a lot. Not in the way he moves, but certainly just physically in terms of his stature, which is average at best, and his color, and certainly his sire. To me, he looks so much like he's by Candy Ride, as was Gunrunner, and they look so similar to what Gunrunner looked like as a three-year-old. Gunrunner grew up a lot at four and into his five-year-old. The one started five. But just, he wasn't a very robust horse at three, and neither really is Vekoma. They really look. Vekoma really reminded me a lot of what Gunrunner looked like, so I'm sure his connection would be thrilled if he turns out anywhere close to how good Gunrunner is. And then there was, the Hidden Scroll situation, which to me was, I know you've said you don't understand, I heard you the other day saying you don't really understand the hue and cry over Joel Rosario's ride. I couldn't disagree with you more. I thought it was just, Joel Rosario, I thought deserved the Eclipse Award last year. I voted for him, but you can be a great rider and still have a terrible ride. And that was a terrible ride to me, to go up not only head and head with, but to try and get in front of a no-count horse that everybody knew was intent on going to the lead. And he went through swift fractions. It was only his second start, first around two turns, first against winners, obviously, coming off the maiden win. And I thought all of that under the circumstances, he ran an amazing race.
Yeah.
To only be beat about three lengths. He'll have a new rider next time, and hopefully more judicious rationing of his speed will be utilized.
Well, I kept watching it, and I saw where he was and how he was positioned, and I'm not a hypercritical type when it comes to the rides. It seemed to me that that the horse kind of brought him there, and considering how quickly after he made the lead, Gladiator King fell away. I at that point, he I thought ran his race and got overhauled and did it probably take some of the starch out, undoubtedly, and it was a lot to be asked anyway. Second career start, so I don't know.
All the more reason to be judiciously rationing his speed.
not trying to outrun 132 to one shot, a no hoper.
I hear you.
So
I hear you.
Anyway, I think he's a great rider, but great riders can have a bad ride. And I mean, how many times do I come on here and criticize jocks for their ride?
You know, not often.
So it was a bad ride.
Well, everybody, it seems, other than Global Campaign, who is going to need a couple of weeks to heal up that hoof, and we talked to Stanley Huff the other day, lives to fight again, and you know, may be a circumstance where he benefits with the opportunity to, you know, kind of go forward, you know, more slowly, and we'll look for him down the road. Signalman, any thoughts on Signalman's stock coming out of this? Did he just need?
Like I said on your show last week, whatever he was going to do in the Fountain of Youth, I expect a better. In his second start, it's just it looked like it was a means to an end. That said, I didn't like his race. I thought the way the race shape unfolded and the trip that he got from Brian Hernandez has to be the most underrated rider in the country. And I mean, he just is so good at saving ground and getting trips with horses. That horse should have run on better than he did. I mean, I didn't expect him to run on and win the race, but the race shape, I just thought he should have finished off the race a little bit better. So to me, his next start, pardon me, which Kenny McPeak said is going to be in the Bluegrass, is going to have to be a significant step forward. And I mean, his race, Mike Watchmaker and I both liked his race so little that we took him off the Derby watch list this year because we just didn't want him to be a placeholder for another 5 weeks until he runs again. When we've got other horses, so we thought, well, you know, we'll see if they can step up and stay on the list. We just didn't want to keep holding a spot for him, so we took him off. I didn't like his race.
Fair enough. Turn to the weekend, Jay, and Tampa and Gotham, and to a little lesser extent, Turfway, start in New York. Gotham, the Gotham came up really intriguing.
It's going to be interesting to see which of these horses end up wanting to go two turns, because I think a lot of them are one-run, one-turn horses. Instagram, coming off a layoff, is obviously the marquee name in the race. I thought he had trained inconsistently out here coming into this race. I liked some of his works, not quite as much. I like the move to start him off in a one-turn mile, and the decision, pardon me, for him to run in the Gotham was made before the suspension of racing at Santa Anita. He was going to go in the San Felipe, and then they had decided to go to the Gotham, which I think for a horse who's coming off a long way up and is only sprinted like he has is a good way to start him off as a three-year-old. That said, I don't know that I want to take a short price on a horse, so I'm not sure where he's at. You know, if he runs back to his two-year-old form, he beats these horses. But I saw just too much inconsistency from him training to embrace him fully. The Mind Control's done well as a late-running sprinter. You know, not that Brady had the hoof problem that Dave Brenning has been chronicling, but he's coming off, I thought, a real good effort in his most recent start, and I'm intrigued to see how Kara McLaughlin's horse does. I mean, he certainly run well, high cal, and you know, much better, I think, what they've decided to do with him, which is just to keep him around one turn, I think is a smart move. His allowance win last time at Santa Anita was really good. So I think there's some depth to this field in terms of, from a gambling standpoint, I'm not sure how much depth there is to this field from a going on to the Kentucky Derby standpoint.
Fair, yeah. Well, there's a lot of horses whose direction will be established coming out of this. I mean, Canix Go, for instance. We'll see what there is with him. I think his participation, which had been seemingly pointing toward not running, the fact that he's running, I don't know. I'm anxious to see what he does, and one of the latest buy-ins from Sal Kumin, Tick Van Flew, and There's a lot happening in the Gotham. Come down to Tampa and
The tick and flu. Right, you know, you're right. Tick and flu. I didn't think ran badly at all last time.
No,
he's lightly raced and he absolutely could go forward. So he's got a chance to. I really think this race could flop a number of ways, and that's why I think, you know, playing against Instagram is the way I'll be going. And if he beats me, you know, well, wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, exactly. That's all right. Let's look at Tampa, and we've got Mike Trombetta and Mrs. Weber with Win-Win-Win. You've got a reborn dream maker who there were big expectations for last year at two and kind of went a little sideways, but it seems like he's righted the ship and quite a bit more. What's your Tampa read?
Yeah, Dreammaker to me is the most intriguing horse because, as you mentioned, there was really high hopes for him, and his last race was very visually impressive. I like that he has two-turn experience, which is something that Win-Win-Win doesn't have, and you know, still not sure that Win-Win-Win is more than a late-running sprinter. I mean, he might be, but I'm not convinced of that yet. So I prefer, of those two, Dreammaker. You know, Well-Defined is obviously going to get a lot of attention off his, off his last win. But my concern with him is I just think he's so far shown himself to be a very one-dimensional horse. If he can get the lead and nobody goes with him, he's King Kong. And if he doesn't get to the lead and somebody outruns him or goes head-and-head with him,
right,
he chucks it. And, you know, the first quarter mile will tell the tale for Well-Defined. But on paper, to me, it looks like he should have company. And that, I believe, will compromise his best chance of winning the race, and so that's why I'd be looking elsewhere. But I like, I know Dreammaker's Fig was 89, which is just okay, but visually it was terrific, and the horse who finished second behind him came back and won. So there's that race might be better than it even looked at the time. And some of the others that are coming out of the, I know Tacitus Mott has been, you know, bringing that horse along pretty deliberately, and I don't like where he drew, but I could see him running well off the layoff.
We also get Outshine in here, a late addition, and kind of a, not a bait and switch, but So Alive had been assumed to come back here after the Sam Davis participation. He got kind of slow getting back on the work tab, but he is back working again. Outshine, Rosario diverts here. Rich Santulli and Jorge Duarte, who's now managing the Colts Neck horses. Mike Maker, a late addition with Dunf. Barboza had talked about going to the Gotham with Zenden. He's going to have to work out some kind of a trip. And Dale Roman's presence with Admire down inside. Marty thought he might be useful underneath. So it's a nice group of 11 on a terrific, a typically terrific Tampa Bay Derby Festival card.
Yeah, no, it looks like you've got a heck of a day of racing to take in down there. I mean, they do a nice job on their big day there, and I think it'll be a fun card to watch. The undercard is very good, so it should be a really good day of racing. And we've got, I mean, even with the San Felipe debacle out here, at least there's still a couple of good races to be interested in this weekend on the dirt, on the road to the Derby.
Well, and you mentioned the dirt, and of course the other point race this weekend at Turfway, the Jeff Ruby Stakes, and interesting group. Some like it Hot Brown. It'll be a fairly short price. There are some interesting alternatives, and that's a card I mentioned yesterday. Tyler Picklesheimer and Randy Weirman put together an unbelievable card. Other than the stakes and allowance, all maiden specials, so not a claiming event on this slate, and really nice.
Yeah, no, you're right. There's some good racing. I mean, even just, it's been a rough go out here in Santa Anita, but at least there's plenty of stuff to keep our attention tomorrow around at other locales.
Jay, I appreciate it. A lot to go over, and we got a lot to look forward to this weekend, and we will see where we stand next week. Derby Watch, of course, you can stay on top of everything at DRF.com as Mike Watchmaker and Jay Pribman track the three-year-olds toward the classic season. Jay, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Don't OD on stone crabs this weekend.
I got 10 days here, so I got some time. Yeah, we got
good
going up
to you.
Not so bad, Ocala. We got Ocala, and then we'll be back for the HBPA convention as well. I know.
Man,
it's pretty good. I love it.
Yeah.
DRF Pribman, everybody, and. Thank you. The Derby Watch. Let's take our last break of the morning. 10 minutes in. I got shades here. I got all kinds of questions. We're going to find out everything you want to know. And look who else. They're coming in. It's happening right here at Tampa Bay Downs. Back after a break.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.